This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
In jail for long periods of time, or they might end up in the hospital. So our job is to help keep people out of jail. What we have in our courtroom are what we call our court team. And on that team, as the judge, the public defender, the DA, we have a parole probation officer, and of course our court monitors are there. And so the team works very closely in monitoring what's going on and talking about what's happening with each person and gives input into doing, you know, what we can to have at least restrictive options for them so they can stay out in the community and still fulfill the directives of the court, which means we'll look at what is it that this person is going to need. Are they going to need housing? Are they going to need help with getting ID? Are they going to need help accessing mental health treatment or drug and alcohol treatment? And they're there the entire time that we're doing mental health court. There's a lot more interaction. Each participant gets to come up and has time to talk with a judge one-on-one and can express what's going on with them, anything they may want. We ask people, we have different phases in a mental health court. So when somebody comes in, phase one is when they come in every other week to court and they see their court monitor every other week. But when they come to court, they need to stay the whole hour. And when you move to phase two, you come to court once a month, you see your court monitor once a month. And then when you come to court, you get to be called first and get to leave right away versus the phase one people. They come and they stay for the whole hour. And part of this is because we want people to hear what's going on, see what's going on, and feel a little bit more a camaraderie and connection to us, because we're not there just to check people in and out. We really are invested in what's going on, and we would hope we have other people that are there invested also.
So you mentioned the DA, you mentioned the judge, you mentioned court monitors. What other agencies are involved with this whole mental health court system?
Public defender's also there. We also have NAMI, the National Organization for the Mentally Ill, are also there at our court. And actually, we work with everybody out in the community. Every single community clinic or program, we work with all of them. We seek out whatever our individuals are going to need to get what they need to succeed.
And who presides over the Multnomah County Mental Health Court? And what is the caseload? How many people are involved in the court at this moment?
At this time, Judge Thomas Ryan is our court, is our judge, and we have two full-time court monitors and a part-time court monitor, and the caseload is 25 to 35, and right now they're just at about 25 apiece, so we're getting close to our total.
And who is eligible? Who makes it to this court, and is participation voluntary?
Participation is voluntary, absolutely. And the reason being is that we're going to be offering a higher level of supervision and interaction with them than they would probably get with just a basic bench probation or even formal probation. Coming in to see us twice a month versus seeing maybe your probation officer once every 30 or 60 days, we're going to be sitting down putting a plan together with them about what is it they're going to need and how can we assist them in making that happen. So as I said, you know, we're much more interactive, so they have to agree that they're willing to participate in this higher level of interaction and supervision, basically. And the people that are eligible for this, we have four diagnoses that we primarily are looking for, which are schizoaffective, schizophrenia, bipolar disorder, and major depression.
So with us are Chris, Dale, and Matthew, and they are or have been participants in the Multnomah County Mental Health Court. So Chris, what brought you to mental health court?
I was pulled over in a vehicle with several ounces of marijuana, and I was charged with two counts of possession.
And was this your first offense?
No, this has been a lifelong battle with mental health issues plus using drugs.
Tell us a little bit about the process.
Well, the process was first I thought I was going to go to jail, and then they offered me the STOP program, which is separate from mental health court.
And tell us about the STOP program.
It's for people that have charges that don't have mental health issues. And mental health court's for people that are duly diagnosed. And I chose to go to that court because I have been diagnosed with severe ADHD and bipolar disorder. So I decided to go in that court as opposed to the other court, which is STOP.
Jean, explain what dual diagnosis is.
So there are several different issues happening all at one time. There might be, as he said, you know, the bipolar, he's dealing with addiction. Others may have even, you know, might have developmental disabilities, that kind of thing. So there's numerous issues going on all at one time. It's not just strictly mental illness or an addiction. And that's, and one thing that Chris brought up, which was very important, is that we look for people that are, have had numerous contact in the criminal justice system. Another one of our goals is to keep people out of that and not go, continue to revolve, go through what we call the revolving door into jail and through the justice system. What we would like to do, our ultimate goal with everyone, is to help them complete and finish with community justice so they can have their life back and be done with it.
So, Chris, was this the first time you made that decision to seek treatment for your mental health and addiction?
7 months ago. I've had a lifelong history of mental health illness.
And have you taken medication all this time?
No. Prior to being arrested, no, I was self-medicating with drugs and alcohol. And now that I'm in the program, I'm on medication and management.
And your drug of choice?
My drug of choice was methamphetamine, but I've used combinations of all different drugs.
And Chris, why weren't you on medication prior to this out in the community?
I lost contact with a medication provider. I stopped taking my meds and quit seeing a doctor, and therefore got lost out there in the community. And I was self-medicating with the drugs and alcohol, and that's how I got lost. But then, you know, after I got arrested, I'm back on track. So I think it's very important that people who have mental health issues that are in this program get the stable doctor once they are released.
So, Jean, what is the entry point? Where do they start?
After we get the referral and we're pretty sure that we're going to be taking them in, we make contact with the individual and ask them to come and observe, which means they just come to court and they just sit there and watch what's going on so that they can get an idea of the, of what we do and if this is something that they're going to be interested in doing and feel that it's going to work for them.
So, Chris, you went to court, you saw the courtroom, you saw the judge, you saw the procedure, and you decided?
Yeah, I decided I wanted to go to mental health court because of the resources. When I first went there to mental health court, I liked the way the court monitors and the judge actually listened to each person's case. It felt to me like they actually cared about each individual's needs. That's why I chose to go to it.
And Matthew, how did you come to mental health court?
You know, basically driving. I got reckless driving and eluding the police and was caught with a quarter pound of marijuana. I went to holding cell for about a couple hours, and then I went to jail for about 2 or 3 days before I posted bail and got out. Mental health court was a good option because I first got my arraignment in jail without my lawyer present, and then went into mental health court for a, I believe it's admission to mental health court, was I read all the rules, the frequently asked questions, and then actually signed a petition to enter mental health court based on my mental illnesses. I'm bipolar, borderline schizophrenic. I have anxiety issues, and I also have dyslexia, which is one of my biggest problems in social atmospheres.
And Matthew, that document you signed, were there people there to help you? Did you fully understand what you were signing? Were you able to ask questions?
Yeah, for the most part, I'm not the best reader, so luckily I had a very smart lawyer that was able to read through the information for me and ask if I understood. And that day, I was given 18 months of bench probation in the mental health court. And at first, I wasn't too excited about it. You know, I had a problem my whole life not understanding that I needed to ask for help instead of trying to figure out things on my own. So when I first entered mental health court, I was probably a little stuck up. You know, I graduated this February after 18 months, and I was a little, what would you say?
Resistant?
Yeah, resistant. Even when I first met with a counselor, I was resistant. I wouldn't tell him my full story. I wouldn't explain things. So I believe I entered mental health court in August 2011. And from August to about December, I hadn't met with a counselor. I hadn't got any prescription medications to help me with my disorders.
So a few months went by before you really...
I started to understand.
Wow.
And
the court system worked with you during that process? They allowed you and they didn't throw you in jail?
Yes. Well, I was still showing up to mental health court on time. I had, one issue meeting with my mental health court supervisor to actually have a meeting. I received 6 to 8 hours of community service. But my biggest problem was asking for help, and I became homeless after I got in an argument with my mom over me being schizophrenic. Not her having an issue with it, but my issue internally, and it just got out of hand. So I became homeless, was luckily able to get a shelter voucher through mental health court, and now I live at it's in Hillsborough called the Hartner House, which is a group home, but I like to call it just a home. And I'm able to take mental health classes on Mondays and Tuesdays, and I believe they even offer some on Thursdays, which have really helped me with my mental disorders. And I'm now taking Lamictal, which is a mood stabilizer in the morning, and I'm taking Zyprexa, which is an antipsychotic at the night. So I've learned quite a bit since I started and finished mental health court.
And what type of mental health classes are you taking?
I take a class called Dual Diagnosis, which is basically a 12-step program, but it's outside of the realms of Alcoholics Anonymous, AA, and where we basically review the 12 steps. And the big thing about the 12 steps is having a higher power, which often you hear as God or the Lord. But what I learned in this class is your higher power could be anything. And the instructor in this class offered me a higher power of time. So if I ever feel the need to do anything, I try and look at my watch and think through it before I do. And the other class I'm taking is, they just changed it. It's called Thinking for a Change. And it recently has been about speaking to people and speaking around others. Basically, it's helping me get past my social anxiety by being able to talk to people and meet people, you know, when I'm out and about. And
so were you on medication prior to all this?
I was not.
Why not?
Because my father just passed away, and I took a month off work, and I've been very depressed, I'd say. I have depressive and mood swings probably my whole life, but no one had ever asked, no one have ever expressed concern to why I would have mood swings, why I would have these troubles. So it wasn't until mental health court that I even understood mental illnesses or heard of mental illnesses, really. And, you know, then I started looking at myself and asking people for help, and they would help me explain what exactly those illnesses are.
So it sounds like this intervention was a very positive change in your life.
Yeah, very positive change in my life.
And if you just tuned in, you are listening to KBOO 90.7 FM. This is Prison Pipeline. I'm Karen James with my guests, Gene Dentinger, manager of Multnomah County Diversion Courts, with Matthew, Dale, and Chris. So, Dale, you're another participant in mental health court in, yes, Multnomah County. So talk about your experience.
Well, I was working with the START program when I first got convicted of my crime, which is a Berg II. And that has to do with person-to-person crimes and property crimes that are involved in START court. And I'm doing really good, and all of a sudden I just didn't do that good anymore, and they decided to put me in mental health court. But before I got in mental health court, I didn't take my medication, and I relapsed, and I'm going to jail for new charges, and they put a hold on me so I couldn't leave from my probation. And I'm going to a mental institution for 4 months.
You were in a mental institution?
The Oregon State Hospital, 4 months. And then I left there, and I had a gentleman pick me up by the name of Tim Bernhardt, and he was my court monitor. He got me into a hotel, Stewart Hotel, and I worked with him, had coffee with him. Sometimes he'd give me a car to go to the Dollar Tree or whatever, you know, stuff like that. I found the court monitor helps you out a lot. and talking about issues before the court. And they, if you have an issue before you go to the court, you can discuss it with him, and he'll bring it to the main court there.
Explain what a court monitor is.
Court monitor is monitoring how you are in the community. Basically, they see how well you're doing in the community, and they urge you to take part in other areas.
And how often do you meet with the court monitor, Dale?
Once or twice a week, sometimes more. It all depends on their schedule and your schedule. And I only go to court once a month on phase two. And I've been part of the program for 5 months. So, and I like it. I think it's a lot better than the START program or for people with dual diagnosis, because I'm bipolar and schizoaffective. When I got involved in the mental health court system, I was about ready to come off probation. And they decided to extend my probation because they could help me more on probation than they could have if I was off. There's other services they can get for me because I was homeless and stuff.
How do they help you? What kind of services do they help you with, Dale?
Find me housing. Okay, they hook me up with a psychiatrist, whatever, and medical and all that. Because I have Medicare, and a lot of people don't take Medicare. So I had a hard time getting my medication when I got out. And I finally found that. And then they helped me find housing again after the Stewart to the Clifford Hotel, which is basically they got groups there during the week. They got DDA. They got DBT. I'm starting a coffee group on Fridays for people. So
sounds great. And Dale, what have you found difficult about mental health court?
Really, there wasn't anything difficult about mental health court. As long as I followed my conditions and I showed up when the judge wanted me to show up there, and I followed the conditions of the recommendations of the probation officer, because they have a recommendation they can put into, you know, during the court process. But if I miss meeting with the court monitor, that goes to the judge. Everything goes to the judge, and I have no problem with that.
So, Matthew, what did the court mandate? What were your conditions of probation?
My conditions were to stay off of drugs and alcohol, not drive my car for 6 months, and also to attend court monitor meetings. And also at the start, it was every 2 weeks I would come to court. And after about 11 months, I graduated into phase two. And then I only had to go once a month to mental health court. So I was continually meeting with my court monitor to work on my skills as far as, you know, my personal assets and things like that to make sure that everything was going great for me.
And tell us about the experience in the courtroom. You're working with your court monitor during the week, mm-hmm. and then you're meeting with the judge. Talk about the experience in the courtroom.
Yeah, coming before the judge, I get nervous around people, especially new people or situations in which I feel like I'm in trouble. So I would always be waiting for my turn, knowing it was going to come up, and I'd walk up there slowly, sit in the seat, and I'd just always be respectful, and I'd say, "How are you doing today, Your Honor?" And I'd get a response, and often he'd ask me. Judge Baldwin was the court judge when I started, and he'd ask me how my day was going, and we'd review the notes from my court monitor, Karen Kepik, and we would go from there. It's usually a 2 to 5 minute sit down and discussion with the judge, at least when we started. And I was nervous, but right next to me was the attorney that helps the mental health court patients, and she would always smile, and it would be a pretty nice day.
What would happen if you weren't following your conditions of probation? What would the judge do?
Well, I've heard several different things from the judge. If I wasn't following, say I missed a mental health court meeting with my court monitor, I got community service. But I've also heard of people that use drugs. They would get either a suspended sentence if they showed up, or they would get time in jail. And there was also an issue where if they do not show up at all for the mental health court meeting, they'd get a bench warrant for their arrest.
Do they use any incentives to help you keep on track?
They pull a name out of the hat.
Yeah, I was thinking that.
At the end of the day,
yeah, there's a raffle.
In the court, there's a raffle.
They have a raffle. Oh, tell us about the raffle. What are the prizes? Jean?
Yes, the raffle at the end of court, they can choose from a variety of different gift cards of their choice. You know, Starbucks, Dollar Tree, Goodwill, Safeway, Subway, whatever they want.
And all the participants can choose?
It's all phase one that come on time and stay the whole time.
Any other incentive? Just staying out of jail and prison. Is that right?
Yep.
Well, I would like to think that some of the incentives that we offer, although it doesn't may not seem that great, is that when we're looking at what a person needs, we try to provide that as much as possible with our funds. That means food cards or vouchering someone into housing, advocating for them, filling out applications with them or for them if they're not capable of doing that. And if we know they have difficulty getting to certain appointments, that kind of thing, we're going to set up a system that makes that work. If we have someone who's so low functioning, they literally can't maneuver the transit system, we're going to maybe go with them or send a cab. These gentlemen are much higher functioning. We haven't had to do some of those things for them, but if that's what they need, we're going to do that. If there's a deposit to get into an apartment or something, we're going, and it's within our range, we're going to offer them that to help get them that housing.
A lot of times after jail or prison, people, especially with special needs, they don't have support out in the community. They don't have family members. They don't have friends. Who helps all of you out in the community? Now, Matthew, you just graduated. Do you have people in the community beyond mental health court that are going to help you out here?
I still live at a house that they give a lot of support, a lot of one-on-one time. And I also have family in the area. I'm trying to make some new friends, but I'm trying to stay out of situations where I would use. So I'm learning how to talk better with people, and that should open me up more for better relationships. If I run into a problem, I know how to help myself out and ask for help to clear my head and get thinking about a better day and better things than getting upset and better things than getting depressed.
And Jean, you wanted to add something?
I just wanted to add that, Matthew brings up a very good point. I mean, he's very lucky. He's got support outside of just professional support. Many people that we work with have no one else but their case managers, their physicians, or us. And that's one of the things we recognized very early on when we started this program is what could we do to help people get more support or connection to the community? Because we're only with them for that year, and when we're gone, they still have to move on with their lives. So that's why we brought in NAMI, and we take people to Folk Time or try to introduce them to other low-cost or different kinds of activities that they can do on their own and meet other people or just kind of stimulate their own interest. What are they interested in? And so we do try to take some time to help them find those things out in the community.
And Jean, what is the recidivism rate?
Well, right now we have the DA is helping us put together that those exact numbers, so we'll have those soon.
Do you find that people graduate and stay out of jail or prison? Are you seeing people cycle back to mental health court or drug court?
Oh, that's a very good question. I say anecdotally, we have not seen people recycle back in. We have not seen that happen so far. But until we really see those numbers, I'm not really, I can't say that for sure.
And what I'm reading about mental health courts, drug courts around the country is that they are taking the cream of the crop. It sounds like a mental health court in Multnomah County does not follow that practice. Is that a fair statement?
Yes, it is. I'm glad you brought that up. When we're working with people, we're looking at all those things in their lives, and we're not looking for just the people that already have housing and already have money and that kind of thing. One of our criteria, obviously, is like, are we going to be beneficial in their life? Can we actually help them stop, get them out of the criminal justice system? So we do work with people that are starting from scratch, that have nothing, versus people that have quite a few things already going for them. So yeah, that is not, we don't take the cream of the crop. That's not what our focus is. Our focus is to help people move successfully through. And if that means that we're going to help somebody start with SSI and get SSI, that's what we're going to do. Or they need their ID. They need to find their birth certificate to get their ID. Our small flex fund can, we use it for that to help them get the things that they need.
And Jean, what are the challenges?
I think one of the biggest challenges we have is trying to house people, finding low to no barrier housing for individuals who have had really tough times because they have been decompensated or not well and been evicted. And now they're doing well, they're tracking, they're doing fine, and really they would make a really great renter. And it's hard to get people to rent to them. And a lot of times we really try to use the fact that they're working with us and how well they're doing to try to advocate and have a second chance given to them, because they deserve it and they're ready for that. So that's one of the biggest challenges we have.
And especially dually diagnosed people with a mental health issue as well as a drug or alcohol addiction. Housing is very tough out there.
That's very true.
And Jean, what would you like the public to know about diversion court or mental health court in Multnomah County?
I'd like people to know that they're cost-effective. I think that they work. We're saving a tremendous amount of money. When it's $176 a day to put someone in jail, we can use $176 in a lot of ways out in the community for people. And we really need to be addressing what the core issues are for individuals and not just across the board, you know, throwing people in jail just because. We need to look at what's going on and why things are happening like they are.
Are any of you working?
I'm currently looking for a part-time job or full-time job.
And Dale, you plan to work?
I plan to work.
What type of work do you do?
I was a truck driver, vinyl cider. I worked in the window industry.
And what types of activities do you do? What do you do for fun?
I play the guitar for meditation purposes. Plus, I've been playing all my life. That's what I do for a positive thing in my life.
And have you played with a band or friends?
Years ago, I used to play in bands. So I would play, if I was to play again, it would be in a clean and sober band. That's what I would like to do, accomplish.
And what type of music do you like, Chris?
I like rock and blues.
My favorite hobbies is I like to go golfing. I played in college. And also I like to go for walks. And I also like just listening to any kind of music that's on my computer.
And Dale, what do you do for fun?
I like to hike and bike.
So what does the future hold for all three of you?
Unknown.
Matthew?
I would say hopefully clean and sober.
I have to agree with that. Clean and sober, I think, would be the most important thing. And then I'd be okay with the mental health issues.
As long as I keep understanding and learning about my mental health illnesses and never forgetting about them, just know that they're there.
I want to thank my guest, Jean Dentinger, Multnomah County Diversion Courts Manager, Chris, Matthew, and Dale. Thank you all for being here.
Thank you, too.
Thank you.
You have been listening to KBOO 90.7 FM. Listen to this and previous Prison Pipeline programs at kboo.fm/prisonpipeline. Like Prison Pipeline on Facebook. Thank you to our engineer, Danielle Parks. Good night.
And you are listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM, 91.9 FM Hood River in the Gorge, 100.7 FM Corvallis in Albany. The time is 7:01. Coming up next, we have Lynn Fitch, Naked, Raw, and Exposed.
You are about to cross the border.
Tune in to A Different Nature and give us a call on Monday, May 20th, when we bring you our semi-irregular call-in show.
This is a chance for you, the listener, to give us on-air feedback and suggest ideas for shows in the future.
And then follow the footsteps to a two-hour-long sustained environment of sonic art or new electronic, experimental, or postmodern music.
That's A Different Nature, Monday, May 20th, from 8 to 10 p.m. Listen and call.
Here on KBOO Portland.
Particles on the Wall.
An exploration of the effects of nuclear technology on the Pacific Northwest and the world.
Particles on the Wall.
An exhibit of art, literary works, science, and historical memorabilia that describes the human and environmental impact of the Hanford Nuclear Reservation.
Particles on the Wall.
May 3rd through June 14th, second floor gallery in the EcoTrust building.
Particles on the Wall.
Co-sponsored by Oregon Physicians for Social Responsibility and KBOO Community Radio.
Particles on the Wall.
Information can be found online at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the page under Community Events.
It's 10th of January. Still ain't had no sleep. She comes waltzing in the nighttime bed of wings. She is dressed up like a bandit with 100 sparkling rings. Looking for my company to keep. Coming closer to me, she doesn't say a word. In the shadows of the carved rock tower, where the sounds of the night were the only things we heard. In my darkest hour.
Hi again, I'm Don Merrill, and I'm talking with Lynn Fitch. Lynn Fitch is the station manager for KBOO. Her other titles include station manager, executive director, station navigator, executive director, and development director. And this is our second night of conversations where we are talking about experience, staff, volunteers, unionization efforts, as an effort to better inform you, our KBOO listeners, and to give you more information with which to help us all move forward for the benefit of the KBOO and the community. Before we get started, I wanted to thank our staff who has been helping us get this on the air, Kurt Lauer especially, who is our board operator tonight. This evening, our talk will last until about 8 o'clock. And the format will be for the first half hour, I'll ask Lynn questions, and for the last half hour, you can ask her questions. I have questions that we didn't get to last night that I'll be asking, so thanks for those questions. And please feel free to send in some more if you'd like. So we're going to be finishing up what we started talking about yesterday. Yesterday, we talked mostly about Lynn's experience, the relationship with the board, the function of the board. And we talked a little bit about some of the unionization efforts that are going on here at KBOO. Tonight we'll finish up some of that. We'll talk about some staff issues. And finally we'll talk about volunteers and money. So we've got a full plate, so we'll go ahead and get started. Lynn, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Yesterday we spent the time talking about your experience, job as development director, and a whole bunch of other stuff.